Welcome to Washington in Focus. I'm your host, Brett Davis, the Center Square's Washington State Editor. Joining me today is the Center Square's investigative reporter, TJ Martindale. And boy, did you do some investigating. So last month, you wrote a story about a document referenced at a September 21 meeting of the State Sex Offender Policy Board that was a summary of a national organization recommending the end of community notifications for sex offenders. And your story caused a bit of a kerfuffle. The chairman of the board, Brad Merrihue, insisted that there are no plans to end community notifications and said the document in question was for research purposes only. I wrote a subsequent story to that effect, and you've written another story after that. You followed up with a public records request. So what exactly did you ask for? And more importantly, what did you find out?
So what happened is we didn't just hear from the board chair. We also heard from the governor's office, and they were much more adamant about what they wanted changed or completely removed as a story. So that got me thinking about why they were getting involved in something that doesn't directly affect the governor's office. And so I filed a public records request for all communication between the Sex Offender Policy Board and the governor's office regarding certain topics, the stuff that I had mentioned in the previous story. And I got a batch of records back, and I'm going through them. And what I found was a letter from earlier this year by the Thurston County Board of Commissioners protesting a 2022 recommendation that the Sex Offender Policy Board made to the legislature. And it regards this state statute that affects another state statute concerning public notices and public hearings for permits if you're going to build housing for convicted sex offenders that are not being held in solitary confinement. So that's their argument. It's a little technical, but that's effectively what they're arguing is would happen if the legislature were to enact these changes.
So this is actually a recommendation from the policy board. It's not a summary from another organization, as was claimed during your first story.
Nope, you can find this directly on the Sex Offender Policy Board's website. You can also find it on the state legislature's website. So this is something that they directly recommended. And what was also interesting is they were getting letters from the Thurston County Department of Health because there was this sex offender housing that they were trying to put in the community. And according to the county, there was no notification. There was no warning to local lawmakers or local governments. And the only kind of public hearing that went on was the law enforcement put on to just try and educate people. And so what's interesting about this is that the board chair said, well, we had no intention of ever getting rid of community notifications when convicted sex offenders move into an area.
Right. He was very adamant about that on the phone with me.
Right. And that is indeed a separate issue from having housing for convicted sex offenders. And one could argue that the latter is much worse or more significant because if a convicted sex offender moves into a neighborhood, they can eventually leave and that neighborhood no longer has a convicted sex offender living inside of it. But if you have housing built, that creates a permanent presence and it's akin to building a military base in the sense that you're going to have a permanent military presence and military personnel in your community. And that's going to be part of the community's identity. So to get rid of public notices and public hearings for that, it's sort of like someone claiming they didn't commit larceny, but they committed Grand Theft Auto or something like that.
Now, I imagine if you're a property owner in one of these areas, this isn't going to sit well with you.
Yeah, because what they also wanted to get rid of, this is another recommendation they made in this report, is to get rid of the 500-foot, I'd say, restriction on sex offender housing near daycare centers and K-12 education buildings. And so it could be located next to a school. It could be located next. Let's say you bought a house close to a school, you could theoretically be living next to what's called less restrictive alternative housing, which is what they use for, you know, convicted sex offenders. So yeah, it would be reasonable to assume that someone possibly contemplating buying your home and finds out about this is not going to be terribly enthusiastic about spending large amounts of money and placing their home next to these type of people.
Now, in I don't know how many documents you got back. I imagine it was quite a few, but were there any other recommendations in there?
There were other recommendations, and we're going to be going through them. This is going to be an ongoing story because there's others that are just as interesting or relevant to the public. It's just that they're not necessarily directly related. But this goes back to the issue of the document that they did a review summary of, where the overall philosophy was that restrictions on convicted sex offenders doesn't work and should be mostly scrapped. And that's really in keeping with what the Sex Offender Policy Board has already been doing as far as its recommendations. So we'll be going through them. And that's why the board chair, in my, as I see it, he was quick to say, we have no intention of getting rid of this specific aspect of state law, but that was not the only recommendation in that document. And as we've seen, they've been in favor of other recommendations that was contained in the review summary.
Kind of feels a little bit like a bait and switch. Like he was very upset by that first story you wrote, but you know, there wasn't really anything wrong with it. But now we find out all this about all these other recommendations. Maybe he didn't want anyone to find out about them.
Well, he probably should have told the governor's office not to contact me.
I also find it ironic that you were unable to get a hold of him for this latest story, because during our phone call, he was once again very adamant that somebody from the Center Square get in touch with him on any follow-up stories. And, you know, you tried multiple times to get in touch with him via email, via phone, and he just never got back to you, never picked up.
Indeed, it was interesting to not hear. And so far, as of you know, now we've not heard a peep from anybody. So
right. I'm always bracing for an angry phone call or email that has so far not come. So who knows what will happen? Well, we look forward to your continued reporting on the story. I imagine there'll be a lot more coming out on this. Listeners can keep up with this story and more at thecentersquare.com. For TJ Martinell, this is Brett Davis. Please subscribe and thanks for listening.